listening to La Ondas Radio del Barrio Aslan here at 94.1 FM KPFA. And now we're getting ready to turn it over to La Colectiva de Radio Zapatista, Chiapas, no se olviden. And we got en la cabina, tenemos a Daniel, tenemos a Patricia y La Colectiva presente en la casa. Bienvenidos, compañeros.
Buenas noches a todos. Good night to everyone. And thank you for having us back here at Berkeley. This is Radio Zapatistas. Chiapas no se olvida. I'm here with Dan.
Orale.
And then Gavilan. And everybody in la cabina.
Hasta la victoria siempre.
Victoria back there. Well, today we have a full show of talking about more repression that's happening in Chiapas, but we're going to start looking at a different perspective than we usually see. We've been seeing the repression that's happening in the communities. Now we're going to start looking at the repression that has been happening inside prisons and what they are doing to resist this. We're also going to do a little update in regards to the fire and the word, and I got to experience a little bit of zapatismo here in the U.S. on the East Coast with Gloria as part of that campaign, so I'll give you a little update on that. The last thing we have is our community members, and we want to see the repression. We want to learn about the repression that's happening in the black community in here in the Bay Area. So all this coming up with you in just a couple of seconds.
Okay, so we're here talking about the first thing on the list tonight is the political prisoners in Chiapas, as Patty mentioned. And the topic that we've been talking about sort of constantly for the last number of months is the paramilitary repression that's going on in Chiapas in conjunction with government sort of moves onto Zapatista lands. They're encroaching on Zapatista lands. They're trying to take them over, trying to actually legalize and legitimize their occupation of these lands against the Zapatista comrades. But at the same time, there's another sort of offensive. We could talk about another prong of the counterinsurgency offensive, which involves arresting people who are members of the other campaign and putting them in jail. And so what we have is a situation where there are a number of political prisoners, in Chiapas, and not to mention all over Mexico. There's political prisoners from Oaxaca. There's political prisoners still in jail from Atenco. This is from, 2 years ago already. And they're just put in jail and sort of taken out of circulation. And so the situation that we have right now, in particular in Chiapas, is one in which there's a number of prisoners who have started a hunger strike to protest the horrible conditions that they're being kept under. For example, the people who are running the jails aren't letting their families come in, for example, and talk to them. And there's a guy, we listened to a radio clip last week on the show in Spanish that we didn't unfortunately have time to translate, but there was a guy, Jesus Lopez Lopez, who's one of the people doing the hunger strike, who's actually diabetic. And one of the things that he was protesting was that the jail wardens weren't allowing him to get effective treatment, medical treatment. And so he was putting himself through this this hunger strike, which is clearly, really hard.
Yeah, so what I want to do is I want to actually start off with a little kind of like an outline of what has happened, because I think we've overseen this in Radio Zapatista, and it's something very critical to see the type of repression that's happening inside the jails. So first of all, we want to see back to December and January when the political prisoners actually sent out these demands, right, that they were unjustly incarcerated and that they wanted justice to happen, right? So what happened is, starting mid-February, these prisoners began this hunger strike. And little by little, different different prisoners started picking up, you know, and that's part of the sentiment of La Otra Campaña, which, okay, our compatriotas are, you know, are suffering through this and they're doing this resistance, so let's join them. So what happens is, like Dan said, a lot of people that are part of La Otra Campaña and also people that are base de apoyo of the Zapatistas are being incarcerated for reasons that are untruthful.
To say the least.
Yeah, I mean, they have no background for it.
There was one thing that we were looking at last week that was, it was a guy, one just like, you know, normal indigenous guy who had been incarcerated for having killed 7 police officers single-handedly, you know, in one sort of swoop.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
Like absurd.
It's really absurd, right? So what we have is, you know, we started with one person who started this hunger strike. Eventually, within a week, you have 12 people add on, and then different penitentiaries, people start hearing on it. So eventually, you have 4 or 5 penitentiaries in Chiapas where political prisoners are being incarcerated, but because they're incarcerated for these other reasons, they're not considered political prisoners. So we have about 360 cases of political prisoners that are not acknowledged of such, that are being trialed as something else, right? As murderers or any other type of reason.
Whatever. Yeah, I mean, this is the exact same strategy that we saw, you know, in the repression in Atenco, where the police come in and they arrest, you know, 250 people, 350 people, something like that, and they just charge them with, you know, obstructing the public, you know, ways, or, you know, I don't know, sabotaging the streets or something like that. There was a guy who they arrested who was actually paraplegic, and they arrested this paraplegic guy for having assaulted and kidnapped, I think, a member of the, you know, the federal police. It's just, it's absurd. They just make up these charges and they throw them at sort of these groups of people.
Yeah.
And it's completely absurd.
And going back to that example that you used about the diabetic man, right? I actually was reading about this woman who was incarcerated because of kidnapping. And she was 7 months pregnant. She goes to jail. She's diabetic as well. And then she's not provided with the medical care that she needs. So she has to give birth to her child without any medical care. And, of course, the child is born dead. And then the child is taken away. He's not given a proper burial, and she's not given any psychological help, right? And she's not getting any of her medications for diabetic. So she's one of the women that actually went into strike, and she's still in jail. Basically, what happened is they were, in March 3rd, they asked the Bishop Samuel Ruiz Garcia to help them out. You know, because nothing was happening. The government in Chiapas was not moving at all. So then he actually sent out a call to the governor of Chiapas, Juan Sabines Guerrero, to intervene because it was prolonging. It was past 30 days. You know, these people have stopped eating. They were just intaking honey and water. You know, so there was something happening inside their bodies that was going to be fatal. So then he intervened and he asked the government. And the government actually didn't respond until a couple of days later.
The state government.
The state government.
Right.
Yeah. And what they did, they're like, okay, we will acknowledge that these might be political prisoners, so we're gonna review those 360 cases, right?
So that'll take a couple minutes.
Yeah, a couple of minutes, right? It took them just a couple of days, right, while these people are in fasting. So after they started reviewing these, a day or two after, they released 90 prisoners, which was great, you know. And gradually after that, they released a couple more prisoners, to the point where on April 5th, the bishop as well, after seeing, you know what, you have accomplished something with this fasting, but you need to stop now. Because if you continue, you're actually going to end with your lives. And that's not going to be an achievement at all. So what they actually did, and we should be happy, is that they stopped the strike on April 5th. So we can thank them for how many political prisoners actually got released, and they're continuing the struggle. They say maybe we won't be fasting, but we still have these demands. And more incredible than that is that not only was this happening in Chiapas, we had people in Tabasco. There was Chiapanecos, Zapatistas in Tabasco that had been put in jail for a ridiculous amount of years, like 20 years, for a murder they hadn't done. And they had already paid 12 years. So we're talking about, what, 1996 that they got incarcerated, you know, and they've been there for so many years, and now they're still battling, you know, they're still in the struggle to say, you know, we didn't do it, and this is just a governmental flaw that they're having. I mean, they're just repressing
us. Well, I think this is a really powerful point, and like you sort of mentioned before, that this is something that's I would say a fundamental part of the other campaign is this, like, ability of sort of political movements or sort of political campaigns to, like, spread horizontally.
Exactly.
Through across, you know, distances, vast distances, mountains, mountain ranges, you know, from one part of Chiapas to another part of Chiapas. And, you know, it's not like there are people who go from one jail to the other jail and say, you know, we want help doing this hunger strike. It's just, it's the information that spreads. And I think that's one of the most powerful things about the other campaign, is that it allows and facilitates this, like, creation of networks whereby people all over the world can get involved in struggles that are both sort of local and global, or local and regional at the same time.
Exactly.
There's no other political movement. At the very least, in California, in the United States, in Mexico, that's trying to do that kind of organizing.
And that's actually one thing that we also talked earlier this year about the Civil Commission of Human Rights coming around Mexico in February, and they were actually one of the few organizations that got to talk to all these political prisoners who were doing the fasting, right? And if you go into, just look, Google them, go on the internet and look for the International Civil Commission of Human Rights, and you can see the description of what they say and the situations of these indigenous people. And they, I mean, they have testimonies, they have all this information where they say, you know what, Mexico is doing things they're not supposed to be doing. This is unacceptable, and the community has to do something about it.
And I just also want to point out, I mean, obviously Mexico is doing, in Mexico, things, certain things are happening that are very unique to Mexico, but it's also important to remember that the situation with the prisons in the United States, in California, is also pretty messed up. And it's interesting. It would be interesting to think about, like, other strategies for organizing that kind of a thing here. I mean, it seems hard for me to believe that, hard for me to imagine a hunger strike necessarily working in a United States jail. I don't know why, but for some reason it just seems a little bit different. But I mean, you know, these strategies can people in different places can learn from the strategies that are being used everywhere. So I mean, it's an important thing to check out. So maybe we'll go to a musical break, and we'll be back in a minute to talk about The Fire and the Word.
With the head, the hollow, and sort of shallow. It gets real deep, like melanin in skin, to bone marrow. See, brothers wanna get real. They niggas wanna feel cap deal from the hot steel. What the deal is this? Real? They said it couldn't be done. How I can bust one in the sky and jump up and kiss the sun.
Son, my full name is AKG. My daughter MG, so hip hop can continuously live through my feet. See, now I'm serious. Y'all must be delirious. Bow, being hype. As soon as you grab this mic, my feline gon' have cat claws. Talking about, boy, you better be tight tonight. See, Medusa is who you better be. Did you know the word tight was invented because of me?
The Fire and the Word.
To the river.
revolutionary step.
El fuego y la palabra.
All right, so we've been doing updates on the Fire in the Word campaign, and this week, actually, we have a member of our own collective who was out in New York for the last couple of weeks and participated in some of the events that were going on there. And so, Patty, I wonder if you could share with us, you know, a little bit of what you saw in the events at the campaign and, you know, just what's going on over there.
Definitely. So I catched up with Gloria in New York on the last week of March, and I was able to see two of the presentations over there. One took place with the Movement of Justice in El Barrio, which we've actually interviewed here on the show, and that took place in the University NYU, which was a really big crowd. We had over 200 people there, which was great. And it also took, that presentation took its own identity, because it was really interesting how the movement of justice in El Barrio did parallels with the Zapatistas. They really broke it down into three different themes that they saw parallels in, one being the organizational strategy, right, which they use was knocking door to door, like we see the Zapatistas doing in the 1980s, right? And basically that's how they started their organization, knocking door to door. And just to give you a little background before I go into that, right, movement of for Justice in El Barrio is a movement that was created against gentrification, because in East Harlem, where they're located, you have big buildings that are old, right? And what they want to do is they want to rebuild them, or what is that word?
I forget. Remodel.
Remodel, thank you. They want to remodel them to increase their rents, because there's a high population there.
We call that gentrification.
Thank you, yeah, gentrification. Should have known, right? So pretty much they want to gentrificate. Thank you.
Gentrified.
Thank you. I'm just getting so stuck here. Okay. And what they did is all these people from, there was 47 buildings under one owner who was going to sell them, or he was going to gentrify them. So what they did is they united together and they made this coalition that went against them. They actually took them to court and they won. So they were able to keep their apartments. Mm-hmm. Pretty much that's what happened, right? So knowing that, they went, during the presentation, they did these parallels with the Zapatistas, first being the organizational strategies, knocking door to door. The second one would be their political identification as anti-capitalist, mm-hmm. self-determining, autonomous, and they want a participatory democracy, right? So really, they're with the idea, their ideals. And the last thing was the encounters that they're doing. They're actually doing encounters with other groups in the society that are facing gentrification in their communities, and they're uniting with them. So that was really great, right? And just the other one that I participated was with El Centro de Familias Inmigrantes, which is a women's-based organization who also is fighting against gentrification, and they're closer to Central Park, Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And what they had a campaign against the public schools, believe it or not, because what was happening is when they were going to enroll their kids in schools, they were actually being asked for financial support when they're public schools, and they said they shouldn't be doing this. So they had a campaign and they won. So now the public schools are forbidden from asking any donations from the parents. Basically, what it was a racial cleansing for the area, right, wanting to kick them out. And if you want to know more about that organization, you can go to www.c4if.org.
Great. And, well, there's the campaign. I think Gloria is in Chicago right now, and they're moving on. I think it's going to be wrapping up pretty soon. But for more information, you can check out the website elfuegoylapalabra.org. And there's a link from our website, which is radiozapatista.org, to their website. So that's the update from El Fuego y la Palabra. And now we're going to be talking to Wendy Snyder, who's from the African Solidarity Committee and the Uhuru Movement. She's been doing organizing about violence, police violence in particular, in East Oakland. And I think she's fresh out of an event against Patrick McCullough's running for office. Are you there, Wendy?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
It's a little bit fuzzy. I don't know if it's I have, I'm on a landline, but anyways, I can hear you enough, I think, to proceed.
That's great. Well, why don't you give us a quick rundown of what your organizations are organizing around and, you know, what this event was that you were just at.
Sure. Yeah, I really appreciate being on this show. Thank you so much. And my name is Wendy, and I'm with the African People's Solidarity Committee, as you said. And I work under the leadership of the Uhuru Movement. And Uhuru, people might know, means freedom in Swahili. And it's an African-led movement that's international, that's really about African people struggling to control their own land and resources. And so it's very much a national liberation question, as is the Zapatista struggle. And what my role is to really win allies from the white community for the African liberation movement. I just wanted to say before I get into the campaign that we're in deep unity with the Zapatista struggle, and we understand that we're here in California, we're in occupied Mexico, you know, that this is land of the indigenous people, but it's also land that Mexican people colonized by the Spanish, you know, are catching hell. And so we are in deep unity with the struggle. And so the campaign at hand has been really fabulous. It's Defeat Patrick McCullough for District 1 in Oakland. And it happens to be where I live, in North Oakland. And this is a campaign of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement that I'm a member of. And Patrick McCullough shot a 15-year-old black teenager in the back of the shoulder while he was running away. This was 3 years ago, and people might have read about it in the newspapers. He was put forward as a hero. He lives in the neighborhood of Bushrod Park, which has been a historically black neighborhood, and you were just talking about gentrification. Well, Patrick McCullough was the point person for gentrifying this neighborhood and pushing out black families. Mm-hmm. And he was not only did he not face any consequences for his actions of shooting Melvin McHenry in the back, he was congratulated by then-Mayor Jerry Brown, given surveillance cameras, put forward as an anti-crime hero, and some white residents in Rockridge and that Bushrod Park area raised money, had a party for him, and now he's running for city council. And so we went to the first public forum, candidates forum, that was held, and it was held at City Hall. It was put on by the League of Women Voters, and it was very much controlled so that they didn't even read our question, and we'll have to get more savvy about slipping in the questions that will put them on the defensive. But so we actually unfurled a banner that said Defeat Patrick McCullough for Oakland District 1, No Vigilantes on City Council, Peace and Unity in Oakland through Social Justice and Economic Development. And just, you know, call the question, because you would not know. Of course, he didn't talk about what he did and what he represents. And the call for more police in Oakland is just, you know, I mean, we need to build an effective opposition to that, because that's not the only voice that's out there. And the city just voted for $7.7 million more police, and they just, you know, showed what they're using that money for by killing two people in the past, you know, the past month. 71-year-old Casper Banjo, who was a really beloved, renowned artist from the Black Arts Movement, was gunned down on Eastmont Police Station, right across the street from Eastmont Police Station, where he actually lived and was walking and had a seizure. He was disabled, and the police surrounded him and gunned him down. Then 5 days later, Jose Luis Buenrostro Gonzalez was gunned down a couple blocks from his home. Midday, he was in his third day of spring break. He was a student at Oakland Aviation High School. He wanted to be an airplane mechanic. And, of course, we don't buy the police version. And you were talking, I just heard in the car when I was coming back, talking about people being held in Mexico, I think you were talking about on trumped up charges.
And
that's just the case all the time. And of course, when the police shoot to kill, they always have their version. They always find a gun. And we just can't let them get away with this any longer. And it's part of this economy where, you know, the people I talk to in North Oakland, Temescal, Rockridge, there can never be enough police for them if that's how they want to solve the problem of poverty. Because people are going to, they're going to do what they can to feed their families. You know what I mean? So, but it's just part of the criminalization of African and Mexican people. And we're using the campaign to defeat McCullough to really raise up all these issues. So.
Well, thanks for that update. I also wanted to point out this piece of information that actually you mentioned to me earlier, that one-fifth of the families in Oakland live off of less than $15,000 per year. And with this sort of $7.7 million going to fund repression, fund the police, instead of some sort of economic development plan, I mean, that seems like a pretty bad use of money, public money.
I mean, to try to raise, I mean, it's actually one in five households, but the households are met most times for people. Here's the music. I mean, it's outrageous. And, you know, so we're saying that what we can do is be a part of this campaign to defeat Patrick McCullough, be a part of a strategy to struggle for economic development in Oakland, real economic development, you know, the kind of infusion of capital that the white community gets all the time, and the community development block grants that the city gets for poverty, where is that money? You know, how come it's not going for people to open up businesses and actually live and thrive in Oakland?
Yeah. That's right.
Well, thank you, Wendy. We're fading away, and I'm actually going to give the information for your forum. Is that okay?
I'm sorry, the information for the Monday night event?
Yes.
Yeah, so Monday night, we really want people to come out. No police state in our city. It's a forum being held on Monday, April 14th at 7 o'clock at the Humanist Hall at 390 27th Street in Oakland. It's between Broadway and Telegraph. And you can call us at 625-1106 if you need more information.
Great. Thanks so much for the update, Wendy.
Thank you.
We just wanted to make a couple announcements. The first one is to join us on the front lines as we march in honor of Emiliano Zapata on the Sunday, April 13th. This is an anniversary of Emiliano Zapata's death. And for more information, you can call 323-829-4135. Also, there's an event at Cell Space on May 3rd. Starting at 8 p.m., this is Radio Cafe. It's an immigrants' rights event, and for more information, you can contact Francisco Herrera and La Colectiva de la Onda Bajita. This has been Radio Zapatista.
Chiapas no se olvida. Have a good night.
Hence the word lesbian.
Hey, let these dumb motherfuckers know.
December 25th, the birth of status. A homosexual...
You're listening to La Onda Bajita.